I believe that the imperative need of the day is not simply revival, but a radical reformation that will go to the root of our moral and spiritual maladies and deal with causes rather than with consequences, with the disease rather than with symptoms. It is my considered opinion that, under the present circumstances, we do not want revival at all. A widespread revival of the kind of Christianity we know today in America might prove to be a moral tragedy from which we would not recover in 100 years. Here are my reasons. A generation ago, as a reaction from higher criticism and its offspring, modernism, there arose in Protestantism a powerful movement in defense of the historic Christian faith. This, for obvious reasons, came to be known as fundamentalism. It was a more or less spontaneous movement, without much organization, but its purpose, wherever it appeared, was the same: to stay the rising tide of negation in Christian theology, and to restate and defend the basic doctrines of New Testament Christianity. This much is history. Falls victim to its virtues. What is generally overlooked is that fundamentalism, as it spread throughout the various denominations and non-denominational groups, fell victim to its own virtues. The word died in the hands of its friends. Verbal inspiration, for instance, a doctrine which I have always held and do now hold, soon became afflicted with rigor mortis. The voice of the prophet was silenced, and the scribe captured the minds of the faithful. In large areas, the religious imagination withered. An unofficial hierarchy decided what Christians were to believe. Not the scriptures, but what the scribe thought the scriptures meant became the Christian creed. Christian colleges, seminaries, Bible institutes, Bible conferences, popular Bible expositors, all joined to promote the cult of textualism. The system of extreme dispensationalism which was devised relieved the Christian of repentance, obedience, and cross-carrying in any other than the most formal sense. Whole sections of the New Testament were taken from the church and disposed of after a rigid system of dividing the word of truth. All this resulted in a religious mentality inimical to the true faith of Christ. A kind of cold mist settled over fundamentalism. Below, the terrain was familiar. This was New Testament Christianity, to be sure. The basic doctrines of the Bible were there, but the climate was just not favorable to the sweet fruits of the Spirit. The whole mood was different from that of the early church and of the great souls who suffered and sang and worshipped in the centuries past. The doctrines were sound, but something vital was missing. The tree of correct doctrine was never allowed to blossom. The voice of the turtle dove was rarely heard in the land. Instead, the parrot sat on his artificial perch and dutifully repeated what he had been taught, and the whole emotional tone was somber and dull. Faith, a mighty vitalizing doctrine in the mouths of the apostles, became, in the mouth of the scribe, another thing altogether, and power went from it. As the letter triumphed, the spirit withdrew, and textualism ruled supreme. It was the time of the believer's Babylonian captivity. In the interest of accuracy, it should be said that this was a general condition only. Certainly there were some, even in those low times, whose longing hearts were better theologians than their teachers were. These pressed on to a fullness and power unknown to the rest. But they were not many, and the odds were too great. They could not dispel the mist that hung over the land. The error of textualism is not doctrinal, it is far more subtle than that, and much more difficult to discover, but its effects are just as deadly. Not its theological beliefs are at fault, but its assumptions. It assumes, for instance, that if we have the word for a thing,